Corinthians, where we have reached the two chapters dealing with money or with Christian giving, 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. And if I remember rightly, in previous studies, we've dealt fairly fully with 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 to 11. In dealing with this whole issue of money, which is better described with the term Christian liberality. I think that's a good phrase, Christian liberality, because that includes attitude as well as the actual giving, and it includes the attitude of the whole of our lives and not just the area of money. And some Christians part with money far more willingly than they part with time. But more of that in a moment. This whole question of Christian liberality, Paul emphasizes, is a spiritual issue. I really meant last Saturday evening to tell you that I had to go on a BBC radio program on Monday, on a program about Christian giving. I forgot to tell you. I wasn't going to mention it in the course of the normal bits of news. I thought, oh, she's drawing attention to me. I thought, no, after the benediction, I'll tell them. I didn't know much about the program. I thought it might be a 10-minute thing. It turned out to be a 60-minute thing. But after the benediction, I forgot to tell you. And of course, the lesson out of all that is you've got a minister who needs to be prayed for day after day. So please keep on doing it. Some folk heard the program and thought that some of the things that were said were worthwhile saying. The whole issue of money in the church is not a problem of finance. It is a spiritual issue, and it can be dealt with only on a spiritual level. And in the whole matter of Christian liberality, the example is Jesus. And this is what Paul speaks about in verse 9. You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. And that verse on its own should take away from us anything of reluctance with regard to Christian service or Christian giving. But then we've studied verses 1 to 11 in very great detail. So we come now to verse 12. And in verses 12 to 15, Paul very wisely emphasizes that there must be realism. If the readiness is there, it is acceptable, not acceptable to man, but acceptable to God. If the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a man has, not according to what he has not. I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of equality, your abundance at this present time should supply their want or their need, so that their abundance at a different time, later on in life perhaps, so that their abundance may supply your want, that there may be equality. As it is written, says Paul, in the story in the book of Exodus about the gathering of the manna, he who gathered much had nothing over, and he who gathered little had no lack. Now, these verses are saying, Paul is saying, now be realistic. I remember years ago having to speak to a very fine, nice Christian man who was really going over the top with regard to the amount of his Christian giving, with the result that his wife, and they had children, his wife was really getting not only tense, but getting near the point of losing sleep over it, because she hadn't enough money to buy the weekly shopping. And I had to speak to this Christian man and point out, now, this can't be pleasing to God, because you're putting an unreasonable burden upon your wife. And the same kind of principle applies with regard to congregations. There are times when a congregation's finances are, for various reasons, exceedingly buoyant. And you, halfway through the year, you read the financial statement and the Sunday income's up about £5,000 in the first half of the year. Well, says Paul, when that is the case, you should be saying, for example, to one Josie, now, excuse us at the moment, but this mission and service target that we've got just now is too low. There are congregations like Easter House, Drumchapel, various other places that are having an awful struggle. So because we're able just now, we'll give you extra. Not so that from now on our target figure is hitting the clouds, because that wouldn't be reasonable. And it's the same, for example, with regard to missionary giving. There are times, and I think this is true perhaps at times with regard to tier fund, when the funds simply flow in, really more funds than they need at that particular juncture. And at that time, another missionary society may be writing letters saying to their missionary, "No, I'm sorry, but we can only send you 60% of your allowance this month and next month." And it's not right, but I've always been a supporter of tier fund. Sometimes you say, "Oh, well, they don't really need at the moment, therefore, where the other need..." You see how realistic we have to be, how we have to think. We sometimes do this, for example, in a kirk session meeting or a congregational board, when we're thinking about the objective for the Christmas Eve offering. And sometimes things are suggested, and I'm in a position to point out that particular area of Christian work has a very, very broad base of financial support, with funds coming from a whole variety of channels. And in a situation like that, I don't think our Christmas Eve offering is really needed, whereas in some other area... Remember what Marion Morrison once told us about some of the beds they had in the hospital at Multan, and pointing out that it's a bit of a problem if you're treating a patient and the leg of one of the beds gives way. Well, we decided, right, that's where the Christmas Eve offering will have to go, to buy new beds. Now, this is the kind of thing that Paul is speaking about here, but he's speaking of it very much on an individual basis and a congregational basis. If the readiness is there, what readiness? It is the readiness to serve the Lord where our service is needed at that particular juncture. If the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a man has, not according to what he has not. We all know the kind of situation where, just as it were, out of the totally unexpectedly, a whole lot of complications arise that are really demanding of our finances. And we say, but I've promised to give to Sandyford X amount. Well, you see, sometimes people say, well, let's mark time with that at the moment. Not jumping to conclusions, not making rash decisions, but seeking to handle our situation, and then, when it's sorted, then we are able to resume the level of our giving. You see, being spiritual about money and being practical about money belong together. And what God has joined together should not be put asunder. I'm all dressed up because I was at a wedding today. But as I study this passage about the readiness, I found myself thinking of the question that we use in the communicants class and the promise to give a fitting proportion of your time, your talents, and your money. I always point out in the communicants class that that's the right order. Your time, your talents, your money. Not your talents in the sense that you make the church into a platform where you can display your talents. But talents, things that you are able to do within the context of the work of God. And it's in these areas that we need to have the readiness. And again, I found myself thinking of the Bible notes I've just been doing in Daniel. And oh dear, when you get into the second half of the book of Daniel, they're awfully difficult to understand. But the story of Belshazzar, remember the writing on the wall, at the story. The God in whose hand your breath is, and whose are all your ways, you have not glorified. There's a children's hymn that says, I cannot draw another breath except thou give me power. Now, the life that we have, the days that we are given, every new day is a gift given to us by God. And it's a very sad and solemn thing if God has to say, now, the God in whose hand your breath is, you have not glorified. Yes, as I do my studying and preparing for Bible studies and sermons, I do think a lot. And I found myself thinking of the verses at the beginning of Galatians chapter 6. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. But this sharing in the carrying of each other's burdens applies to a whole variety of areas of Christian life and Christian service. The business of helping each other. Not least in the matter of prayer. And in a prayer meeting, as a general rule, I don't want to make it rigid, but as a general rule, we shouldn't be praying for our personal friends, even though they may have specific needs, because the rest of the prayer meeting don't know who you're praying about. And when, for example, we pray for some of the ministers, it's always good that we use their surname and perhaps the location where they are. So that if new people come to the prayer meeting, and some folk have said this to me, when they've started coming to the prayer meeting, they say, Mr. Philip, it's difficult because, you see, we hear people praying for this, but we don't know who they are or where they are. Well, bear one another's burdens. And we help one another in that way. Let's read our verses again. If the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a man has, and not according to what he has not. I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of equality, your abundance at the present time should supply their want, so that their abundance may supply your want, that there may be equality. You see, here is a recognition that all of us at times need to be carried. Come on, be honest. You could not honestly say that week after week, month after month, year after year, you have managed to handle your Christian life thoroughly, competently, without any sense of worry or defect at all. If you claim that, I'm afraid I'll have to say that you're telling lies. Or at the best, I'll say, well, please, could you speak to me sometime over the weekend to tell me how to manage to do that? And you see, it's the same again in a prayer meeting. You know, almost instinctively, we expect certain people to pray. And we tend to leave them to get on with it. But they may have had a terrible week. They may have spent the whole week carrying some person's burdens. And they're exhausted. And what they need perhaps on the Saturday night is for somebody else to be praying in the earlier part of the prayer meeting. Or someone who has prayed in the early part of the meeting to pray again later on for some area and for some of the ministers that we love and respect and care for, but who still haven't been prayed for. It's a great, you see, fellowship is a great word. It has all to do with sharing. Sharing in the kind of way that we are aware that somebody needs a help, so that there would be equality. And there are times, you see, that we can go to people and we thank them for helping us, and they tend to say, oh well, but don't you remember that spell when you helped me? That's fellowship. That's caring. As it is written, he who gathered much had nothing over, and he who gathered little had no lack. They shared. And they shared rightly. But in Paul's whole dealing with this matter of finance, one of the elements which he has spoken about already, and if you turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 16, we'll see this in the first few verses. It is clear from what Paul has been saying in his second letter to the Corinthians that all that we mean by Christian liberality must be systematic. Everybody, of course, comments that the great resurrection chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, that sails up into the heights. And there's no break chapter divisions in the original manuscript. Paul's up in the clouds about the resurrection and the blessing of the resurrection. And he said, now, concerning the collection. There are some people who feel that we keep the offering out of the service. You know, it's a distraction. It's part of worship. Now, concerning the contribution for the saints. As I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so that contributions need not be made when I come. And when I arrive, I will send those whom you accredit by letter, and I will send them to carry your gift to Jerusalem. The whole concept of systematic Christian giving. Look, says Paul, when I come, I want to concentrate on ministry. I don't want there to be appeals for money. so it has to be systematic. Back to 2 Corinthians. You'll have been reading a lot in the papers, bit by bit, about the forthcoming General Assembly and all the problems about finance. Well, part of the church's problem of finance could be dealt with in measure if congregations were systematic. In our congregation, we send all the money that is due for the minister's stipend and various other things, including our mission and service target for the wider work of the church. We send it through by a banker standing order, 10 monthly payments, February to November. Think that's right, isn't it, Jack? We don't do it in January because you've got to wait a wee bit before some of the money comes in, and in December then you're tying up the loose ends. But even though the church has pleaded with congregations to do this, it is astonishing the number of congregations who send nothing to Edinburgh until it comes to the end of November, and some not even till the end of December. Which simply means that the Church of Scotland, being by and large an honest sort of body, sees to it that the ministers get their stipend put into the bank month after month after month, which means that the maintenance of the ministry committee has to run a colossal overdraft, upon which it pays a very considerable amount of overdraft interest, which could be avoided if congregations were systematic. They have to send it anyway. Well, eventually, if they don't, the minister won't get his pay. And on the whole, I think it's desirable that ministers should get their pay. There's debate about that, but never mind. Do you see how realistic we have to be with regard to time and talents and money? Now, the next verses may surprise us because they're so down to earth. Verse 16. Thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you, the same care as Paul had, into the heart of Titus. For he not only accepted our appeal, that is, Paul appealed to Titus, will you go back to Corinth and organize this whole business? He not only accepted our appeal, but being himself very earnest, he is going to you of his own accord. I like Titus. He saw what needed to be done. And he said, well, Paul, I've visited them already. It's a bit sticky to begin with, but now the relationship is good. And, well, I'm obviously the man to do this particular job. And in any case, I'm really very fond of these Christians in Corinth. If you are so willing. He is going to you of his own accord. With him, we are sent. Now, if we'd been writing this letter, we'd have mentioned a name. Along with Titus, says Paul, we are sending the brother who was famous among all the churches for his preaching of the gospel. But he's not going to Corinth to preach. He's going to sort out the business of finance. A famous preacher doing the ordinary, down-to-earth, practical task. The brother who is famous. It's an interesting phrase, isn't it? I don't know who the brother was, but I can imagine. Excuse me, Paul, is that me you're speaking about? Verse 19. And not only that, but he has been appointed by the churches to travel with us, Paul, Titus, and others, in or with this gracious work. Now, this gracious work. I don't know which elders are on duty to take up the offering tomorrow. But as they come down the center aisle, they are carrying this gracious work, this work of grace. The grace that has touched the hearts of the Lord's people to give of their substance. Let's read the verses 18 and 19 again. With Titus we are sending the brother who is famous among all the churches for his preaching of the gospel. And not only that, but he has been appointed by the churches to travel with us in or with this gracious work, which we are carrying on for the glory of the Lord. Now, when you're putting your offering into the collection bag tomorrow, are you aware of what you're doing? You're doing something for the glory of the Lord. You know, it gives quite an importance. We are carrying on for the glory of the Lord and to show our goodwill. We intend that no one should blame us about this liberal gift which we are administering. The background of that, of course, was the very nasty criticism of some people, that people like Paul and some of the others were in it for the money. What they were really saying was, yes, so it's all very well, this sacrificial giving, and we'll put our money into the Lord's offering and we'll hand it over to these accredited people, but we just wonder how much of it's going to reach the poor saints in Jerusalem. It was a wicked thing to say. What is Paul? We intend that no one should blame us about this liberal gift which we are administering, for we aim at what is honorable, not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of men. See, sometimes Christians, I don't care what people think or say. That's not always a Christian attitude. And with them, Titus and this famous brother, this famous preacher, and with them, we are sending our brother, another unnamed, whom we have often tested and found earnest in many matters. It's almost as if Paul was saying, sorry to say this, but, earlier on, I had my doubts about whether he should be appointed or not appointed. But, time and time again, he's proved himself to be spiritually and practically dependable. With them we are sending our brother, whom we have often tested and found earnest in many matters, but who is now more earnest than ever because of his great confidence in you. As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker in your service. And as for our brethren that we are sending along with Titus, they are messengers. The Greek word is really apostles, and the word apostle really means a sent one. They are messengers of the churches. The glory of Christ. How many people would you describe in the practical business of Christian life and Christian service as being the glory of Christ? It's like thinking of someone saying, the Lord Jesus is pleased with the likes of him or her. So says Paul, give proof before the churches of your love and of our boasting about you to these men. I think maybe I've commented almost all that needs to be commented. It's all about the administration of finance, and this is an important area because of witness. The whole giving campaign, if we dare call it like that, according to verse 19, the end of the verse, is for the glory of God. We've spoken about Titus, who had the confidence of Corinth and the confidence of Paul. We've spoken about this unknown brother, the famous preacher, given this practical task and accepting it very, very willingly. We've spoken in verse 20 about the care that Paul was taking with regard to the administration of the finances of God's house. It's not enough to say, oh, God knows that we're dealing honestly. In a world like this, what we would call suspicion is something that sticks and grows. And of course, there is a devil. Isn't one of the sad things in secular society these days the fact that, if not day after day, certainly week after week, we're reading in the papers about dishonesty? Two lawyers struck off the list and not to be allowed to practice as lawyers because they were cheating the legal aid system. Lawyers cheating. You see, it undermines confidence. When you read in the papers about appeal cases at the court after judgments have been passed, and the sentence being revoked because there was dishonest evidence given at the first trial, it undermines your confidence in the system of law. Well, you see, if that begins to happen in the realm of the Church of Jesus Christ, it was an awful shock, was it, a year or two back when, granted, there wasn't a lot of publicity about it, when it was discovered that the publications area of the Church of Scotland, there was a deficit in the books of something like £100,000. Well, someone ceased to be employed. But you see, in a world where dishonesty has almost become the pattern or the practice, oh, that's the way businesses are run. The need is for individual Christians and for congregations of Christians to be absolutely and utterly in the clear. This is one reason, amongst others, one reason why we put a financial statement into the congregational record month after month after month. This is why at the end of the year the treasurer's books are audited. Not because we're suspicious that the treasurer, I know that he keeps all the church money in what's called the treasurer's account in the Bank of Scotland. But we know what that means. They are audited. Not because we don't trust the treasurer, but in order that there might be testimony to the world, not just to the church, but to the world, that in matters of finance, we walk in the light. This is what Paul is speaking about here. The third deputy in verse 22, as I said, has proved himself spiritually and practically. And in verse 23, you have Paul's reference that he gives to Titus. He is my partner and fellow worker in your service. And as for our brethren, Titus and the other two, they are messengers of the churches. The glory of Christ. Is it in Ephesians or Philippians? Philippians, I think, that Paul says, only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel. when we go into chapter 9, we've just about 2 minutes, 3 minutes left. Verses 1 to 5, Paul is really saying, I don't need to go on writing to you about this subject. Now it is superfluous for me to write to you about the offering for the saints. For I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the people of Macedonia, saying that Achaia has been ready since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. But I am sending the brethren so that our boasting about you may not prove in vain in this case, so that you may be ready as I said you would be. Lest if some Macedonians come with me and find that you are not ready, we be humiliated. They could say, oh Paul, I thought you said the congregation in Corinth was ready a year ago. Oh yes, they were ready and they declared their readiness. But they haven't quite got round to it yet. Well, says Paul, come on, get round to it. Lest we be humiliated because we boasted about you, to say nothing about you. Lest we be humiliated for being so confident. So I thought it necessary to urge the brethren to go on to you before me and arrange in advance for this gift you have promised, so that it may be ready. Not as an exaction. Now say, oh well, I suppose we have to. I think if that's our attitude, the Lord's the first person. Oh, well, don't bother. Not as an exaction, but as a willing gift. Remember, we began with, if there's a readiness, and we end up with a willingness. When we come to our Bible study next week, what we'll find is that Paul will speak about the blessings of faithful givers. It's the passage that has, the Lord loves a cheerful giver. And the Greek word for cheerful is the word almost literally from which we get our English word, hilarious. It's quite a thought, isn't it? Let's sing our hymn before we get down to prayer. It's hymn number 30. It's got a phrase in it that recurs in each verse, and it fits into what we've been saying. It's hymn number 30, the tune is number 9. Though troubles assail and dangers affright, though friends should all fail and foes all unite, yet one thing secures us, whatever betide. The Scripture assures us the Lord will provide, and very often the Lord provides through people rather than direct miracle. Hymn number 30, the tune number 9.